CK Rusty, good morning. Happy Friday. How's y'all's day going?
Going good. Sun is shining. Cat's laying next to me. Life is good.
Same here. A beautiful, beautiful Friday. It's cloudy. It's cool. It was 90 degrees on Wednesday, so I'm enjoying it. Excited for the conversation today. I don't know what we're going to get into, but Aleph is here. Inviting him up to co-host. Grant is here. My goodness. Everybody retweet the room and Aleph will be playing us something interesting, I'm sure. I'm guessing Patrick down in the audience. I'm guessing Aleph is not going to be playing Madonna or Janet Jackson. And I've been wrong before, but I'm going to go out on a limb with that one, think it's a safe prediction.
Every other song that I've heard lately, some fellow gets shot, and his baby and his best friend both die with him, as likely as not. In half of the other songs, some cats cry, are you ready to die? We've lost almost all of our people, and I'm a wondering why. Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and a hopping and a bopping and a lovey lovey dubbing. Let's forget about the whining and the crying and the shooting and the dying. The fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life. Old Marty Robbins down in El Paso a little while back, and now Miss Patty Page, or one of them, is a wearing black. Kathy's clown has Don and Phil where they feel like they could have died. If we keep on losing our singers like this, I'll be the only one you can buy. Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and a hopping and a bopping and a lovey lovey dubbing. Let's forget about the whine and the crying and the shooting and the dying. The fella with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life. Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and a hopping and a bopping and a lovey lovey dubbing. Let's forget about the whine and the crying and the shooting and the dying. The fella with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life. Let's think about living. Let's think about life. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Good morning.
Aleph, I think you have a passion for crooners and Western swing that you haven't told us about yet.
Yeah, a little bit. Although I have to say, so let me tell you what I don't like about that song. So that was Let's Think About Living by Johnny Burnett. But the original Let's Think About Living was by a guy named Bob Lumen. Bob Lumen never got credit for it. And I actually did this on purpose, and you're going to put up with me, Lucas. So that was the most popular version of that song, Let's Think About Living, 1964. However, in 1960, Bob Lumen, who co-wrote and produced it, also recorded the song. Never became popular. So we're gonna hear the first 30 seconds of the Bob Lumen song.
That's right.
We're gonna talk about some
I
stuff.
meant to do a thumbs up, not a thumbs down. I like that song, so play it. I mean, I meant to do a thumbs up instead of a thumb. I don't know what I said. Play it. That's a great song. And there's more covers than that. I'm trying to think of who I know sings it.
Check it out.
In every other song that I've heard lately, some fellow gets shot, and his baby and his best friend both die with him, as likely as not. In half of the other songs, some cats cry, are ready to die. We've lost most all of our happy people, and I'm a-wondering why. Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovin'.
Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life. Old Marty Robbins down in El Paso a little while back, and now Miss Patty Page, or one of them, is wearing black, and Kathy's clown has Don and Phil where they feel like they could die. If we keep on losing our singers like that, I'll be the only one you can buy. Let's think about living.
Okay, so there's Bob Lumen. I would argue, Lucas, Bob Lumen far superior.
I would not argue with you. I would totally agree. Grant,
unbelievable, right?
Yes, and I know all the words to it. Like I tried to find a cover from where I know it, but I must have grown up listening to that song.
And I bet you grew up listening to the Johnny Burnett version, and I'll tell you why. Because Bob Lumen, unfortunately, made the mistake of telling Johnny Cash that his wife was pretty, and Bob Lumen's record never really made it after that.
It has a certain Carter's Family Fold ring to it. I don't know about
it. I know he's got a little bit of like that Elvis, let's think about living. He's got a little bit of that, and he's got a little bit of that Johnny Cash sound to him as well.
You know, I remember when I was at a Carter's Family Fold once, because, you know, if you're in if you're in Appalachia, it's a must see little hovel. But there was I actually saw Willie Nelson at the Grand Ole Opry before they moved to that gross monstrosity they're in now. And it was utterly hilarious because he described working his way through the Victoria's Secret catalog one summer in Carter's Family Fold.
Oh, Patrick.
There you go, Lucas.
Yeah, tell me, Patrick, you wound up at Dollywood. We all know you did.
Well, the best part, he said the pages got a little sticky by the end of the summer. But the...
That's from the tears. That's from the tears. All that sinning.
So there you go. Yeah. So the story of Bob Lumen and Johnny Burnett, and Let's Think About Living. I've had that on my mind a lot lately because in Web3 there's just a cadre of fucktard, no talent ass clowns copying and pasting from each other, marketing messages, code, everything else. And so I always think about, sometimes the original doesn't get the credit that they deserve. Like Dookie Dash, for example, is a copy and paste of a 16-year-old open source video game. Fight me on that. That's a fact. So, anyway, good morning, Lucas.
Well, you have me absolutely racking my brain as to why I know that so well. I'm gonna have to ask my grandfather. I know it, I think it was covered by somebody else, but I can't think of who. Are you sure it wasn't covered by something later, like maybe 10, 15 years later?
Oh, I don't have any idea. I just know that the most popular version was the 1964, and the version that was originally recorded, Bob Lumen, 1960. Maybe it was recorded after that. I don't know. I was too busy listening to Agent Orange, Black Flag, you know, and all those punk.
My grandparents used to tell me that they listened to all types of music, and there were two, and that was country and western. So I probably heard the original when I was growing up several times. But anyways, happy Friday. What's on your mind today? Are we gonna talk crypto, or are we going to delve into obscure? Are we gonna go into Arthur C. Clarke? We never on Arthur C. Clarke.
What was it, Grant? What was it you said? Come for the comic book nerd movie talk, stay for the correct takes on Web3.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought that was great, by the way. That's gonna be our new tagline. Come for the geekiness, stay for the nerdiness. How about we shorten it to that?
Oh, I like the way that his ends with a punch, which is come for the, you know, stay for the correct takes on Web3. That's I think you nailed it. Grant, we have I posted a ton of stuff. You probably posted a ton of stuff. Like, man, I don't even know where to start.
It's hard not to just like look at what Michael Saylor is saying and react to it. I don't like to just react to news, but in some ways it feels like it's timely and it's happening, and there's the whole correct take on Web3 kind of a thing going on there. So I don't know. Part of me wants to talk about that. I also am thinking hard about this whole idea that somebody is going to, that has access to a fiat money printer, start buying Bitcoin, and who's going to be the first to go after that. That's on my mind too. Maybe samurai stuff. We haven't really talked about that either.
Cynthia Loomis, Coinbase, GameStop. Yep. Holy crap, there's so much to talk about.
So much.
And half the audience is like, what the hell are you guys talking about?
Wait, let's start with Cynthia Loomis in Wyoming.
Okay. Sure.
I mean, yeah. Well, go ahead, Greg.
So Cynthia Loomis said something interesting, which was, you know, essentially come take it, right? Which was an allusion to her saying, if you're self-custodying your Bitcoin, that in some way, I don't know, baiting the authorities that be, that, you know, self-custody is somehow protected from that. But I feel like it's a little disingenuous for a sitting senator to do that. I mean, it's like, you know, you're in a position to like say that because you're protected in a lot of ways, but like, you know, look at what's going on with a lot of crypto, like the jackbooted thugs and come get you. I don't know what she's really saying here. I mean, I applaud that she's trying to be supportive of it, but I don't know, in some ways it feels like, you know, sitting in your protected castle with your guns and your armed guards around you, it's like easy to say that you're protected, but you know, it's not so easy for the rest of us, especially the way things are stacking up.
Yeah, she has this campaign, for those of you who don't know, she has this campaign, black and white campaign, just has a Bitcoin symbol really big in the middle of it, Bitcoin symbol, and below in big bold uppercase black letters it says come and take it, and then Cynthia Loomis, you know, or Loomis at the bottom, which is, I mean, she's likening it to your right to bear arms, Grant, which is what you were saying. She's basically saying, you know, come and take it. It's like, I have a constitutional right for this, but I agree with you. I mean, good honor though. Like, maybe it's disingenuous, but good grief. At least it's a senator who like appreciates that Bitcoin is a thing that we should be able to possess.
That I like. So I like the fact that she's in the right headspace. She's, approaching this from the correct direction. But the thing that's missing here is that, it's not as easy as that, because with the right to bear arms, there's, you know, the Constitution and precedent and all kinds of stuff that's protecting that. And there's a lot of alignment around it. This one, okay, sure, you can liken it to that, but it's not the same way at all, because if there were a lot of people that sort of stood on that there's not alignment, that this is something that is allowed or that is going to be protected in the long term. But I like that we have a senator that is aligned with Web3 and crypto and wants to be on the right side of things, so that's great. But it just feels a little bit of a let them eat cake kind of a thing, because it's not so easy for everybody else to stand on that hill like that, because this does not appear to be protected speech in a way that has common alignment and understanding, because there's all kinds of stuff that's lining up in the opposite direction, which I guess sort of bleeds into this other thing that we're thinking about and looking at, which is the shutdown of Samurai Wallet and the grab of the developers, even in other countries, and which also ties in with, you know, what happened with Roger Ver. So there's some things going on here that make it not so obvious that this is somehow a protected thing or something that, you know, bears the force of law that you can do this thing and not get in trouble for doing it.
Well, but Wyoming has deeper roads and has done more than just, you know, like have a campaign from a senator. Like the things that I think about what make crypto attractive to Wyoming is it has a population of 700,000 people. The ways that are the balance between power between states and the federal government have shifted, and Wyoming has seen the short end of that stick. So I think this is why we see them courting DAOs, decentralized organizations. I would guess this is why Cardano, Charles Hoskinson has moved to Wyoming. Like Wyoming has fought the Federal Reserve System. They have gone to bat for depositors or smaller banks that were looking to get the same representation as some of the larger regional banks. So I think I was very glad to see her like be so both aggressive and also unequivocal in her support for Bitcoin. Like it would be very interesting to see that move into some sort of movement where Wyoming starts holding Bitcoin like El Salvador, or copies the Texas bullion deposit but takes on Bitcoin. What would you say if they made moves in that direction?
I would say awesome. That'd be great. You know, like I said, I like that she's pointing in the right direction. Just, I don't know. I wish it was this easy to just tweet something and have it be that. But so if she's standing behind and pushing force into a direction that, you know, helps make this canonized into law in Wyoming, great. That's a really good start. You know,
because yeah, Grant, were you on the space when I read her statement about Bitcoin and how we all have a right to? And I don't know if you were on that. I mean, I don't know if you were on that space.
I think I might have missed that one.
She made a pretty strong declarative statement about her position on Bitcoin and how we have a right to own Bitcoin and the thing the government's doing right now. She's against it. I'll have to try and track that down. So I think she, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out. Like, I can't tell if she's a right wing nut job or if she actually believes in sovereignty. And if are the same people who believe in the right to bear arms. I mean, the crossover with Bitcoin, I know there is one, but I don't know if it's like a big crossover. I haven't really worked that through in my brain yet.
Well, I mean, in many ways, the argument about the right to bear arms is a right to self-defense. And what is this notion of sovereignty or being your own bank, but also like self-empowerment, or, you know, those are, it's basically the same conversation. It's just like what is the narrative that's leading into it? I did post up her statement about the right to own Bitcoin up on the Nest if you want to hearken to that. Anyway, I don't know that there's too much to go into there, but I'm very glad to see like not just representatives but senators stepping up and defending crypto. Maybe she has a bone to pick with Elizabeth Warren, maybe, but I think it's deeper than that. I think that we are beginning to see states understand that crypto is a path out of reliance on the dollar, and that they can be using it and defending it. And I would say that several politicians like understand that our monetary system is on shaky grounds right now, and are hamstrung by the legislative process, and so are going to use their platforms to give us other alternatives. So I'm very glad that she, you know, I don't care what the rhetoric is, as long as it's in support of crypto, I think it's good.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I'm currently living in a place that is not super crypto friendly. Although I'm not sure there are a lot of super crypto friendly places in the U.S. right now. Like Grant said, bringing Roger Ver in for tax evasion on something that the fucking doc, I read the document, something the document states, they had an argument around the value of the Bitcoin, like you said, Grant, and Ver was like, look, man, like, and this is something that DGens can't seem to get their fucking heads around. He's like, look, man, I own so much of the supply that I literally can't sell it for whatever price you value it at. Like, if I sold it, the price of Bitcoin would plummet. So what do I, it's not a real value that I have in Bitcoin. And I think a lot of people should really get their head around that in Web3. You own, a bunch of cap, with, hat or whatever the hell token, and there's some value for the token that's like the value of the token, or there's some total value that's the value of the token multiplied by the total supply, but there's not liquidity of that. And you know, we have this with THND all the time. Somebody will sell like a whole coin at once, just press button, monkey want banana, get banana. And they'll suffer a lot of slippage, and they'll be like, I can't believe I suffered slippage. I'm like, bro, you sold 0.5% of the entire fucking supply in one shot. Yeah, there's slippage. But they don't seem to get that. And the government seems to not get that as well.
Well, did you also see that Roger Ver had renounced his American citizenship? And this was also a taxation for that leaving. I mean, he's not even an American citizen. He's a citizen of Spain.
Yeah, they talked about seven. Well, he was extradited too. They talk about 7 years. Did you see that? That was part of part of their argument is, you renounce your citizenship, but there's a 7-year period of where anything that you earn, or anything that you would have you had, and any amount that you would have made on that, you still owe taxes. It's unbelievable. So it doesn't matter. You were a citizen. It's like fucking Hotel California. You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. Taxes. Unbelievable.
It's absolutely unbelievable that like they won't let you off the plantation. Some people, have likened this to him being brought back under, the Fugitive Slave Act, which in some ways feels kind of real. I mean, it's like, what is this? You really can't get out? Like, if you want to, you just say, even though I was born into this, like I want out. You can't. Like, and even though he tried to do everything right, they still dragged him back. It's crazy.
I mean, Article 3. I think this is a great. I think that's an absolute great paradigm to harken back to. Like, that is. We should be talking about sovereign immunity, sovereign equality, and what it means to be a citizen of the states, and thinking back to a time whenever we were both like guaranteed movement, but also that there was no federal monetary system. Like, this is, it's unprecedented for the federal government to do the things that they are doing to other countries, and now to us, their citizens, or even people, oh, especially citizens who've left other countries, or have, I'm sorry, left the United States to embrace another country.
Yeah, so all you Bitcoiners who are sitting there like working with all of these people online and saying, oh, I'm going to get dual citizenship, I'm going to go live in another country where I don't have to worry about taxation. You better hope like hell you didn't acquire that Bitcoin in the 7 years prior to when they come after you. Because, I mean, we're literally talking about Bitcoin was acquired in 2014. And renounced citizenship in, am I getting the timeline right, Grant? I swear, I think he renounced citizenship in 2014, or,
Yeah, I think he renounced his citizenship in 2014. I think he acquired the Bitcoin probably closer to the launch. Like,
yeah, that's what I was going to say. So I got acquired Bitcoin in 2009 to 2011. Renounced citizenship in 2014. In 2018, they're arguing about the taxes on the 40,000 fucking Bitcoin that he had accumulated prior to 2014 when he announced citizenship. And that's what they got him on, a $50 million, you know, $250 million or something like that, or $150 million, sorry, and about a $50 million tax, long-term capital gains tax, $50 million tax hit on something that, you know, this is starting to piss me off. We should talk about something else.
Well, let's finish it off just by completing the thought here, because we need to say this one more time. There's no way he could have sold that Bitcoin. There could not have been enough liquidity to maintain that price. So the idea that somehow he should have paid taxes on an asset for which there was not enough liquidity to sustain that price is absolute nonsense. And this is the whole problem with this idea of unrealized gains and taxing those, because just because something has this perceived market value, you know, this idea that it's trading at this value, therefore every single unit that exists is at that price, and that you could sell into the market and that you wouldn't affect the price. And so therefore, you know, you have to pay taxes on something that has this very ill-conceived notion of what the actual market cap slash value of the units are, is fascinatingly wrong and not at all reflective of reality. And so I hope he fights this hard, because hopefully we can, you know, get a precedent set, or at least something establishing that this is not the correct way to do this, and this has been completely incorrectly handled. I agree with you, though. This is definitely pissing me off.
Yeah, it sends me into low Earth orbit to think that the idea of sovereignty, the very foundation, you know, didn't we dump some fucking tea in the harbor for taxation and the idea of sovereignty? I mean, and now we're having this, you know, argument again. When by the way, there's not even a gold bar backing this paper money that we just seem to keep printing. Yeah, I would be pissed off about Bitcoin too. I'd be real angry. Fixed supply fundamentally has value based on the proof of work and the laws of thermodynamics, public ledger. I mean, everything about Bitcoin is the most, it's got to be, for our monetary system, it has to be the single most threatening thing that has happened in a very, very long time.
Well, and I think this sort of shows how big of a threat this really is to this established fiat cabal. I mean, if it wasn't such a threat, like if it didn't look like it had this amount of momentum behind it, I just can't imagine that they would be fighting it this hard, because it sure looks like all the chips are lining up that, this whole fiat fractional reserve thing is on its last gasp of breath here.
Well, because I want to point out too, like mark-to-market accounting, Sarbanes-Oxley, you know, what other two big things that are happening in the news right now are also have spun out from I don't know, changing the rules of finance to market accounting. Sarbanes-Oxley is the act from which the government just argued in Fisher versus United States over J6, over the interference impeding, and that was because Enron was hiding and destroying documents. But also Silicon Valley Bank, like, where were they allowing this to be done forward to the future, and to be valuing on perceived fluctuations in the value of loans that were taken out. I'm talking about Silicon Valley Bank, and it was when the Federal Reserve started raising their lending rate that the financial instruments that they'd taken out started to turn sour. And anyway, I just
well, we
just,
had a, we had another bank collapse last week as well. So
really, what bank? I missed that.
I can't remember. It was like New York First Bank or something. For it was something First Bank. It's like it Republic First Bank. I know it wasn't First
Republic. Really? Republic First Bank took on not well. First Republic. No, First Republic. I'm going to look into this really quickly.
So I know First Republic quite well. They're the ones that froze assets when FTX collapsed. Them, Silicon Valley Bank, CBIC, and Signature Bank are all the ones. I know them well. They're the ones that froze my assets when FTX collapsed. Oh, we've noticed that you're trading crypto. We must freeze your account. I'm like, okay, first of all, motherfuckers, you know I trade crypto because we signed documents and you were the only banks that held crypto assets. So don't give me this, oh my God, all of a sudden this is new information nonsense. But they did. And, you know, try fighting, you know, there's four entities that are big, giant pain in the ass to fight, right? And it's sort of the government is one of them. But specifically, it's like the SEC, right? It's the FINRA. It's any bank or banking system. And then it's the fucking Preet Bharara's cadre of Gestapo, like Southern District of New York, you know. Those are all. I'm so glad Preet Bharara got, like, the guy got caught with his hand in the cookie jar. He literally admitted, "Oh, you know what? I guess I was ego driven and kind of did go after." If you've ever seen the TV show Billions, Chuck Rhodes is based on this dude. I mean, he had a mean on for anyone in a hedge fund. I don't know, maybe he tried to get a job at a hedge fund and they turned him down. Maybe it's one of these like Gary Gensler things where he was like, "I'm going to go work at Coinbase," and they're like, "We would rather die." And he's like, "You know what then? I'm going to go become the head of a government entity and fuck with you." It's like, it's so bizarre. I want to talk about something else though. When you're ready to move on, Lucas.
Well, I just I see now too that New York Community Bank Corp is also in trouble. I was wondering if this bank had purchased any of the accounts from the failure of First Republic or Silicon Valley Bank, because they did get some of those at a discount. So it would be interesting to see what the what sort of portfolio that they were carrying, and what happened there. But yeah, let's move on. I surprise, surprise, another bank failed in the United States. Let's all go watch.
Right, another big bank too, not a little one.
Hey, look, they're all big anymore.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, that's why it's like a credit union is the only way to go if you want any humans. So listen to this. Confidential treatment requested, not for distribution, members and staff only. June 6th, 2021. Question. Can we include that the White House put pressure on us to censor the lab leak theory? Answer from Mark Zuckerberg. Thanks for the context. This seems like a good reminder that when we compromise our standards due to pressure from the administration in either direction, we will often regret it later. So I don't know if everyone saw this, but Facebook admitted that it censored the COVID lab leak because the White House put pressure on them. And he's publicly... So this means... For those of you not like aware, like I don't know if you remember, but there was a period of time where we were really afraid in this country, and the problem with being afraid is we didn't have any information. Was it a bat? Was it a lab leak? Was it genetically man-made fucking dirty bomb?
Was and it gain of function? Yeah.
Right. Like we had a global pandemic that literally on the daily we were listening to politicians and the news tell us threatened to wipe out all of humanity. And we had restaurants shut down for over a year. Absolute fucking disaster. And Facebook admits that it censored, that the government put pressure on them. Zuckerberg admits the government. So this explains two things. One is it explains that all of our tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists were right. But you know what, Grant? It also explains something else that I've been racking my brain on, and we've mentioned on the show a bunch of different times, which is, how did Zuckerberg get away with not going to fucking prison for lying in his testimony before the Senate and before Congress about whether or not they read encrypted data? He flat-ass fucking lied about that. Provably. And I was like, how did this guy not get into trouble? I think now we know. He bent the knee.
Yep. The number of people that have been able to go before Congress and just straight up lie and like nothing happens. It's like we're living in a banana republic at this point. This is just ridiculous. There is no rule of law anymore.
What do you think about that, Lucas? That one of the most, I mean, this is now coming out. We have internal documents now. This is now coming out that Facebook admits to censoring information on Facebook to prevent people from knowing that there was a lab leak in Wuhan.
Well, I mean, we've known that the federal government, the administration of the executive, had been exerting influence over. I mean, that we've known this since the Twitter files, like that it was happening with regards to one, you know, subject, they specifically were targeting COVID for so many reasons. I think it very interesting that it both like was during the Trump administration, but also like let's step back and look at O'Keefe Media Group, OMG's latest honeypot date with your news from your latest date with a member of the intelligence community, in which a member of the security state bragged that they had withheld information from Donald Trump while he was president, and not only that, but had spied on him and his wife. So, you know, that's the reality of the world we're facing. I spoke with a friend from college who, you know, follows and keeps up on all sorts of world news. Somebody that I used to speak with on the regular about what was happening in the world. I mentioned some of these things. He's not on Twitter. He had not a clue that any of it was going on. So it's still happening now. Like we live in a, I wouldn't say a walled garden, but we live in the realm of Faramir here, next to Mordor. The blight is creeping in on us, but I don't know. Like that, we should, you know, call your friends, tell your friends. That's what I think. Otherwise, there is no recourse. I'm glad, because I worry too that I worry about what tools the executive has. Like even our senators, like many of them are lamenting the reauthorization of FISA with now warrantless wiretapping on American citizens. Something else that's going on. Like these are a massive problem. I think we need our states to stand up and be the interlocutors that are defending their citizens. That's also why I was glad to see Cynthia Loomis like stand up against the federal government's policies, even if it was only words have power. Words bring people together and make people realize that they're not alone and that something is happening. Bryn, welcome up. What do you think of all of this wildness?
No, I share the same sentiment. Good morning, by the way. And when you reference the O'Keefe Media Group, I didn't get, and I'm sure you said it, obviously, but I didn't get the point there. What were you saying about them?
Well, they check, and I'll throw it up on the nest, but O'Keefe Media Group just had a space and revealed a videotaped date, another hot date with a James O'Keefe. This was a woman, and she is on a date with a man who identifies himself as employed by the CIA, flashes his badge, you know, like brags about how it doesn't say CIA, and then proceeds to talk about the information that the CIA withheld from Donald Trump, and also the the investigations that were going on Donald Trump and his wife while he was president.
No, I watched that. I saw it. I usually follow most of the stuff that O'Keefe does. And I mean, I don't know about you, but whenever I watch him, like, he's on the radar. I don't know if he's in the mainstream radar. I think it's more social media kind of, you know, independent grassroots people who are into politics, whatever. But, you know, he's getting into a territory where, like, I always think, like, damn, like, one day we're going to wake up and something really weird happened to James O'Keefe. He's the only one that I think something like that could happen to, because he's disrupting and I think probably pissing off the people that deserve to be, you know, that deserve, you know, the scrutiny that he's supplying. But I mean, damn, man, he ruffles some feathers, bro. And if you're in his war path, that's some scary stuff.
I mean, is it Boeing level feather ruffling? Did you read about that?
Dude, I watched it this morning. Yeah, I saw that too.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, man, that's some scary shit. I got, you know, I was referencing, I got a wife from Eastern Europe, right? From Georgia, former USSR. And, you know, I'm always not surprised, but it's always, you know, she's never surprised by these things. And that's concerning, right? Like, of course, that's probably what happened. And she's not a conspiracy theorist. She's not into all this kind of stuff. But, like, you know, that it's not the way that we normally operate. And you're starting to see, you know, indicators that we, you know, that are concerning. So, yeah, I think O'Keefe's a really important citizen journal, maybe the most important citizen journalist at the moment. So whenever he puts stuff out there, you know, I'm watching for sure.
All I'm hearing is that my conversational Russian is going to come in handy when I speak to your wife.
Oh, she's fluent in Russian. Yeah, I think English is like her third language. So Georgian, Russian, then English, and a little bit of something else. I forget the other language she speaks. But yes, she will. She'll go at it with you for sure.
Have you learned any Russian yet?
Нет, no, none, zero, like zero, zero. And even even Georgian, like my stepdaughter and her speak Georgian, so I'm around it all the time. I've picked up zero. And mostly, like, if I, you know, I still remember Spanish from high school. I could still follow a Spanish conversation and probably understand what's going on and what they're talking about. But something about those huh and the huh and like all these different throat sounds that are different, I swear to you, it's like Krypton. I just can't do it. I cannot follow a conversation. I have no idea what anybody's talking
about. Well, next time something happens and you're upset, say the word blin.
I hear.
Do you know what blin is? Blin is my favorite curse word in any language.
What is it?
It's technically, it translates in English or French to crip. It's like it's pancake. And so what happened is, for a very long time, children in Russia were not allowed to curse. Their parents were very strict. And so they made up words. This is just, I love the etymology of language. They, like Foucault, right? They made up words so that they could say curse words and their parents wouldn't get upset. So Russian kids would run around saying blin, blin. Like, and it was like the F word, right? But it just means crepe or pancake. And so now, to this day in Russia, if something happens, you'll hear somebody say blin. They're literally saying pancake, but it's like, it's taken on this whole new meaning. It is pancake, but it's also like the F word. Oh my God, it's one of my favorite curse words ever.
Well, now I'm concerned because my wife, you know, my name's Bryn, but she calls me, the way she pronounced my name sounds eerily similar to the word you're saying. It's like Bryn, Bryn, whatever. So maybe she just calls me that and it just makes her sad.
Oh, you're her little crepe. You're her little pancake. I love it.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, is that where Bellini comes? I don't know. I know it's a different area, but I'm wondering if that's...
Oh, man. So, yeah, so that's my... I did some work for some Russians back when I was in my 20s and early 30s. And so I kind of picked up... I'm weird with language, so I picked up a little bit. A little conversational Russian. I actually got into an argument one time with a moving company, where they all pretended like they couldn't speak English, but they were speaking Russian to each other. And I let them talk to each other and say a bunch of bullshit for like 15 minutes. And then 15 minutes in, I was talking to the supervisor on the phone and the guys were standing there. And I just started telling him, these guys are trying to rip me off. You're pissing me off. You know, I just went off on him in Russian. And everyone was like, oh, fuck. And so they ended up handling it. They were basically holding the shit hostage and saying that we owed more money. I'm sure you guys never experienced this. You movers tell you they'll pay, you know, it's a certain amount. And then when they get there, oh, something happened. We have to charge you another $1,000. We don't know what, you know, it's gas and the truck and the thing and the stuff, you know, even the big ones. So ended up working out.
I used to move restaurants around all the time and all that. And it's like they get you at the most vulnerable, because by the time you've actually moved and it's time to pay them, because it's usually on demand, you're so fucking tired that like I just get like, it's an extra $500, like just go away. I want to forget that this moving day even happened. It's like hush money in the moment. So as tough as I like to be with, you know, people adjusting prices on me on moving, they get me every time because I just want that day to end and would give them anything just to go away. So I've been roped by moving companies a dozen times.
So Bren, you don't know this about me, a little funny side story. I used to own a network security company, which I know you know that. One of the top privately held network security companies in the world. And we used to do something called penetration testing, which is people would pay us to break into their place and tell them how we did it. It was all above board. It was all perfectly legal. But I ended up meeting these Russian oligarchs. I mean, oligarch is probably a strong word. I mean, they were certainly they were descendant from Russian royalty. They ran a lot of the clubs and car dealerships and things in Moscow. And someone had stolen from them. Someone had taken money out of, I think, their bank accounts or something like that. And I ended up helping them track down the people that stole from them. And it was a lot of money. And to this day, I think if I ever wanted to call in a favor, it would just be one phone call. Like those Russian oligarch, maybe not completely on the right side of the law. Those motherfuckers remember what a favor means. It's like old school. I love it.
It's I'm sorry, I know we're direct. It's funny you mentioned that because talking to my wife this morning, my wife was married before, we were both married before, and her second husband in Georgia, which again, I guess when this guy was born, it was still a part of the USSR, whatever. But the corruption in Eastern Europe is insane. It's insanely organized. He was in that world. It was more like extortion and had more money than just endless supply of money. And I think what's interesting that it kind of hit me this morning, and it kind of ties into some of the governmental stuff we're talking about now, is the major difference, right, is a lot of times there, it's completely, even on the ground level, even a shakedown of a business, blah, blah, blah. You know, you see that in America, you think of like these mafia pictures where someone owes money every month. But in a lot of these countries, they're connected directly to the government. So there's no fear that there's going to be any, you know, repercussions. There's no fear that you're going to get in trouble for this because it's in collusion with the government. So it's bizarre. I don't know how you even, it's such a systemic deep issue. I don't know how you ever get past that. I feel like it just becomes a part of the culture if that's what's already going on.
Yeah, it's almost as bad as extraditing a guy who left the country 4 years for not paying taxes 4 years after he renounced citizenship on Bitcoin that he owned but couldn't sell, and so you created some weird strike price for it.
Dude, that's wild. I mean, yeah, that's wild. I don't know, like, in a traditional scenario, like, if you leave like that for something financial, do they end up just letting you go in a normal setting? I feel like they do, or no? Do they always come after an extradite? I don't know how.
Well, Roger Ver got ripped from the bosom of Spain where he was a citizen. So we talked about that at the beginning of the show, and I got kind of worked up about it. You know, I want to talk about something positive. Did you guys see that Coinbase reported just an absolutely unprecedented, I read this yesterday, day before, remarkable first quarter earning, $1.6 billion in earnings. It's more than double any of their best previous quarters. First quarter earnings for Coinbase, $1.6 billion earnings, cash in the bank, $1.6 billion. Here's what's fascinating about it, though. You'll appreciate this, Lucas. It's they attributed it in their earnings report. They attributed it to strong market conditions, the introduction of new products, including the Coinbase institutional platform, which for those of you who are in the private chat, you know a lot more about that than anyone else does. We've been talking about it for days. And their base sequencer fees, bass sequencer fees contributed a lot to that $1.6 billion. That is fascinating to me.
What is a bass sequencer fee?
I know. That's my question.
Well, did you have you do you have an answer?
I don't at this point. I'm asking the question just like everybody else. You're attributing some of $1.6 billion to bass sequencer fees? I mean, I thought the bass didn't have any fees. I thought there wasn't any gas, that there wasn't any this, that there wasn't any that. And yet a portion of your $1.6 billion is to bass sequencer fees. I feel like we're about to uncover, I feel like we have accidentally uncovered a conspiracy that is like the Solana printing tokens to offset gas. I think we're on to something.
Grant, have you heard of this? I'm thinking when I hear sequencer,
this is straight alpha from Aleph. I'm listening and fascinated by this. I agree. I was not aware. this is an interesting thing for sure.
Yeah, somewhere between $224 and $230 million of that is in base sequencer fees. And I don't even know what the fuck that is. It's not gas, because base has such low, I mean, or is it? Is Coinbase making the money on, quote, gas fees? Or, I mean, that's something we're going to have to dig into. I'm going to have to do some research.
There's no, I mean, is Coinbase an NFT marketplace? Like, do they have NFTs?
Oh man, you missed, were you not around during that whole, maybe Bryn wasn't either, during that whole Coinbase kept promising to launch like a competitor to OpenSea and then.
Well, I remember that they did. What did they ever like?
Because... Did they? I don't think it ever actually happened. Maybe it did. I mean, they that thing fell. I mean, Coinbase NFT marketplace just never really happened. CK, do you know if they launched, if they actually are Rusty? Do you know if they actually launched them? I bet Rusty knows. If Coinbase actually launched an NFT marketplace?
I don't think they actually launched it, but I'd have to check. I don't, if they did, like 9 people bought an NFT and then it went away.
Yeah, I don't know if they fully launched like a working marketplace. I think they had a wallet set up where you could incorporate NFTs onto Coinbase and have a NFTs associated with the Coinbase wallet. But I don't know if they had a fully working marketplace where you could interact and trade with other people.
Yeah, I think Blur came out and just completely decimated any marketplace. You know, we were in the process of building a marketplace when Blur came out. Do you remember that? And it was just like, forget it. There's no way to compete with this. Like, I know when I'm, you know, pushing a rock uphill, that would have been a ridiculous Sisyphean task.
That's Atlas, not Aleph. Aleph, do you remember, before we close it out, I want to go back to, I can't believe you can speak Russian, by the way. I think you speaking, if you speak in Russian, you're probably guaranteed that nobody in the deep state's going to understand what you're saying, because obviously they just listen to American conversations anymore. Do you remember during the COVID the fiasco that and misinformation and everything going on Twitter back then, the suppression of accounts? Do you remember the account Hamilton 68?
No.
Bryn, Hamilton 68?
No, that just predates me. I have no idea.
Okay, well, Hamilton 68, it was at the time whenever we kept hearing about the Russian disinformation, the Russian attack on our media outlets, et cetera, which necessitated government interference and monitoring of those communications. Turns out Hamilton 68 was a user who was just retweeting accounts that he didn't like. So put Hamilton 68 on your radar. Do a deep dive into it. And
it turned out to be hokum. It turned out that he was just.
It turned out that he was a former intern at a company called Spotify who had been employed there to write the algorithm for selecting music.
Wow. Because, I mean, Yeah, so I was looking it up. Hamilton 68, a tool for to track Russian disinformation on Twitter.
And it turned out that it was just somebody who was flagging accounts that said things that they didn't like.
Well, that's how very Spotify of them. So Spotify used to claim that they had an AI that would do this algorithm. And by AI, what they meant is a bunch of interns creating playlists. So it's sort of ironic.
Like just like the Amazon checkout AI.
Exactly. AI. It's a call center in the Philippines. Well, that's interesting. Okay, we have one last thing that we have to cover before we go, and that is the GameStop. GameStop has $1 billion in cash.
Billion. And last year they allowed for the investment of these assets as directed by Ryan Cohen, I guess, right?
Yep, former CEO and founder of Chewy, the dog toy treat company.
Yep.
And he is now the CEO of GameStop?
He is the CEO.
He is indeed. And what did they do? What are they going to do with that $1 billion?
I hope they're not buying T-bills. God help us all if they buy T-bills with that investment, right? Like, why aren't they just making the MicroStrategy play? Like, I agree with that tweet. Like, that is seems like the obvious play here. They should just put all that money into Bitcoin. What else are they going to do with it?
Well, he's taking it pretty seriously. He did reply to the. Something like that's a possibility. They should do the MicroStrategy.
Really?
Just invest. Yeah, just invest. I mean, Ryan Cohen's not an idiot, right? Like, he's a smart cookie.
For sure he's a smart cookie, but like that's not been confirmed yet, right? If that's a follow-on MicroStrategy. Like, if MicroStrategy ends up being right about this, it's going to be one of the most valuable companies that's ever existed.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially as we start to see, you know, the Bitcoin ETF in China, I think, was approved. And they're talking about how it's going to just dwarf the Bitcoin ETF in the U.S. by inflows. So that's pretty interesting.
Well, maybe they'll be investing in derivatives of like that Hong Kong ETF.
I have a PSA before we go, Lucas, which is, kids, don't live stream your mom and create a token.
Oh, that's my gosh. You were talking about this and had a chance to look into it for the. That is an absolute wild thing that is happening. That is absolutely wild. And then he rugged it, right? Just straight up rugged it?
Oh, well, or she did or someone did, yeah. And it's a community takeover now.
And by community takeover, is that like a bunch of community members now live streaming their mothers?
I know, right? We talked about this briefly the other day and just said, like, do we really need to mix crypto with OnlyFans? I mean, no. If you want to mix crypto with OnlyFans, convince OnlyFans to accept crypto payments and just, like, let that be over there. And let's just have some sovereignty over here with money. Well, you don't need to merge them.
Well, was the live stream of the mom like marketing, or was it token gated? Did they have to go like burn tokens to watch the feed? How'd that work out?
I think that was the case. I think you had to have a certain number of tokens and you had to spend them. I stayed as far away. I was like, this is just a disaster waiting to happen. So.
Well, I do think there is something around the tokens and burning for, you know, like for cell phone minutes. Like, that is something that I do think we need to see more of in the crypto atmosphere. Like, maybe just like the internet and the old. Remember at the start of the internet and webcams? There were like people who lived in storefronts like Mannequin, and they webcammed that was the thing for a while. Maybe we're seeing that occur again, but this time in quote-unquote Web3 world. The metaverse is real. We're gonna make metaverse happen, Grant. We're gonna make it happen.
Yeah, no one else could, but we're gonna make it happen. You guys crack me up. Funny show today.
Well, all right, everyone, stay cheerful out there. Tell your friends that censorship is real, and come back to FOMO 11 o'clock. I'm going to close this out with a little bit of Rilo Kiley. I think it's apropos to bring up Rilo or Jenny Lewis in the news. Yeah, corruption is real too. So be careful out there. See everybody next week.
Fancy style for real decision maker.
You're basically just rugging, bro.
Always
panicking. I just changed it to wide spectrum. How's that? There was a vacuum going on earlier. Give me a little break. I had to switch it over to voice isolation. All right, everyone. See you next week. Keep your phone on wide spectrum, or you will get DMs from Ayla, I promise.